take probably like 5 minutes or so before my heart rate decreases enough and stop swallowing hard and all that, to where it actually like makes sense and sound coherent. So maybe I'll read first, and that'll help me get out of the way and for me to tell my story. But anyways, this is I'm supposed to talk some about God, and I think it's kind of funny that I would talk about God, because if you had told me 4.5 years ago that I would, one, be involved in AA and be asked to tell my story in AA, I wouldn't have believed you. I didn't want to be here when I got here, and I didn't want to do the work, and I didn't want to show up, and I didn't really necessarily know that, like, that this was the answer, you know, and that I needed to get in touch with this higher power thing and all that. But I guess I'm going to read a thing that has meant a lot to me in sobriety, because I struggled with the God thing. And so this is from page 46 of the Big Book, and it says, "Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men." So, I think I'm a little less anxious right now, and I can start telling my story and tell you what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And I grew up in a wealthy family. My parents had money. That wasn't one of like the concerns. I have a older brother who's 3 years older than me, and a younger sister who is a year younger than me. And I'm a middle child, and some of you already know what that means. I started drinking. I remember my first drunk. My brother's 3 years older than me, and one of the things that drove me and that I remember as part of my experience growing up was that I always wanted to be cool and to fit in, and to, you know, I wanted to win your acceptance, and I wanted to feel that, like, connection, and I wanted to plug in, and I just, like, you know, I wanted this sense that I was a part of something, and I just, like, didn't have the tools to plug in. And I was a lot of times doing things and being the class clown and trying to figure out a way where I could feel like a little bit of that, you know, just some of that connection. And my first drunk was, alcohol was around my house and my parents drank alcohol, and I knew that it was important and it was a part of all the celebrations and, you know, a part of dinner time and everything. But I had a little bit of alcohol here and there, but the first time that I really got drunk was when I was 12 years old. And my older brother and his friend thought it would be funny, you know, if give me some alcohol. And he poured a whiskey shot, and I drank it. And he poured another one, and, you know, I drank it. And he poured another one. And, you know, I'm 12 years old, so these aren't, like, the biggest shots ever. I can't drink that much. But in my mind, I remember taking, like, you know, 10 shots. I'm sure that, you know, it was probably something like 4, 3. My mind exaggerates what the truth is. So I drink these shots, and I don't really remember. Like, some people, they tell their story and they say, like, their first drunk was like the best thing that ever happened to them. But, like, I went, like, so quick into that, like, uncomfortable drunk where, like, the room is spinning and, like, there's, like, nausea and, like, I'm gonna throw up. And I stumble like down some stairs, and like I'm trying to turn the alarm off, like, you know, so that I can let my brother's friend out, and I can't do it, and I'm kind of like scared at this point in time, like I'm getting like real drunk, and my my brother says, take a cold shower. And I know that, like, I'm have, like, some characteristics of alcoholics, because when I hear, like, take one, like, it just registered automatically, like, three cold showers, you know. And I took three cold showers. And I took three cold showers that night and went to bed with, like, the room spinning. And I woke up the next morning and never had the thought, like, I'm never going to do that again. You know, and I don't know if that makes me alcoholic, but, like, it's a really good start, you know. Like, to have consequences from the first time that I did it and, like, to just be able to automatically, I mean, there was no effort involved, automatically just dismiss any consequences as a result of my drinking. That was actually something that my mind was able to do on numerous occasions where bad stuff happened, but it just didn't register and it didn't click that somehow these problems are related to my using. And anyways, it would be a lie if I told you that I started drinking every day at the age of 12 years old. It's a progressive disease, and it started out, you know, that I was, you know, it started out, I smoked weed when I was 12, and I drank for the first time when I was 12, and it wasn't around that much for me, and it wasn't a part of my social scene that much until I hit high school. The summer before I went to high school was when I, like, really got on top of my drinking and drugging, and started hanging out with people that, you know, like, it was more socially acceptable at 15 for some reason than 12 to, like, get drunk on the weekends. And I started hanging out with, like, a few older people that were doing it, and it was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me at 15. Like, I loved getting fucked up. I mean, it was like, why didn't I start doing this more often when I was 12, you know? Like, this was, like, that way that, that connection that I was looking for, I felt like I had found it in alcohol and drugs. And, like, man, I could, like, be the person I wanted to be when I was out, and I could be the center of attention and, like, not be nervous, and, you know, I could, like, the acceptance thing, like, didn't matter as much anymore. And I hear, like, a lot of people, like, it's, like, that feeling of, like, less than, like, just kind of disappeared, and it didn't matter. And, you know, I would be a fool not to, like, continue to go back to do this as much as I possibly could. And, so I progressively get into things that I had, you know, previously in my life, like, I'm never going to do that. Like, I'm absolutely never going to, you know, like, I'm never going to do, you know, crystal meth or cocaine or mushrooms or acid or anything like that, because the experience of, like, smoking weed and drinking was just, like, so powerful that I was, like, willing to forego, like, you know, these, like, really strong commitments because of, like, how powerful it was and, like, how much of, like, I guess, like, I mean, what it did for me, you know? And so I'm, like, in this, like, progression of the disease, and I'm, like, 15, and I'm in high school, and I start, you know, like, I'm making good grades, but I'm, like, hanging out with, like, different people that are in my, you know, like, upper classes, like, I'm in the advanced classes, but, like, I hang out with, like, these different groups of people and try to fit in all these different subcultures that, like, you know, I'm still looking for that connection and still trying to find where I belong, and, like, I'm never really finding it in the groups that I'm, you know, seeking out. And I think I went through some, like, interesting phases. I was a punk skater, and I was a gangster skater, and I was a cowboy, and I was a hippie, and I went through, like, all these phases and, like, hung out with all these different people. And I mean, I hung out with the, like, you know, when I was a punk, I hung out with the gangsters, and, you know, like, we had our point of connection, like, the drugs and alcohol. Like, I could hang out with different groups of people, but, like, I never really felt like I found my people. And, like, man, I was sitting in the meeting last night, the speaker meeting, and I just, like, I was sitting in here, and the other meeting room, and I was like, man, I really feel like I found my people, you know? And, like, I have so much, like, compassion for the person who's sitting in here who doesn't feel like they really fit in here yet, you know, who's still kind of struggling with it. And, before I worked the steps, I sat in here and I didn't feel like I was, like, really here and that I'd, like, found my people. But eventually, I kind of, like, went through this process of you know, like, listening to people and working the steps. And I really felt like this is where it's at, you know. Like, I am done looking for that subgroup and that other way and that kind of thing and surrender that these are my people. So, anyways, I don't feel like I'm really, like connected right now and, like, really in my story. I kind of feel like, I don't know, like I'm not collected and together. So anyways, bear with me. I'm hanging out with, you know, these different groups of people and not really feeling like I fit in and trying really hard. And that was, like, one of the things, like, I tried really hard. And I was making good grades. And part of that was motivated by the fact that I knew that if I made good grades, I would have my parents' attention diverted elsewhere so that I could do what I wanted to and in my free time. And, you know, like I talked about before, like, I really wanted to, you know, get drunk and loaded as much as possible. And free up as much time, get my work done so that I could reward myself. And I guess I'll kind of skip in because I want to talk about recovery, like what's happened since I've, you know, been sober and stuff. I had a, like, chain of events that, like, really, like, kicked in high gear, like my alcoholism and drugs. And I had a girl, you know, that moved away, and, like, you know, it was, like, the most depressing thing ever for me. You know, she was the one, and she moved away, and that was the period of time when the only period of time when I drank daily, and kind of, like, spiraled down from there, and did all the stuff that I never said I was never going to do, and, you know, did a lot of stuff that I figured would probably be pretty hard to live with later on. And one night was hanging out with some friends, and, you know, it was a night just like any other night. Like, I went out with the intention of, like, getting completely obliterated like I did every other night, and with the car keys, because, like, that's what I did. I mean, I drove drunk all the time. Like, I had my, you know, my learner's permit, and I drove drunk with my mom in the car. Like, I drove drunk, and that was, like, what I did. And I went out, like, one night, and I was drinking Mad Dog 2020 and smoking a lot of weed. And we went out, and I was like, you know, we were going to leave to go, you know, score some more pot. And, you know, there was, like, nothing out of the ordinary that night. Like, it was just like any other night. We were, like, playing video games and, you know, like, listening to music, listening to Grateful Dead, and drinking MB 2020, smoking weed. And we went out that night and to go get some more bud, and I blacked out somewhere on the drive to go get it. And I had, like, two friends with me and one business associate, and I dropped all them off in a blackout, and then I have, like, a few hours unaccounted for. And then the next report of me is from a toll booth attendant who called the Houston Police Department and said, we have a, you know, black BMW going the wrong way on the tollway, and he's going, like, 100 miles an hour. And then the next report after that is 20 miles between there and the wreck. And I got in a head-on collision. And I figured that I was going probably, like 60 miles an hour at least. You know, like, I'm in a blackout. I don't remember any of this. Like, this is all from, like, police reports. But I figured I was probably going, like, at least 60 miles an hour. And the other car was probably going 60 miles an hour. So it's like hitting a brick wall at 120 miles an hour. And, like, I really get this, like, idea of, like, borrowed time. And, like, that, like, when people talk about, like, being sober and, like, getting second chances and, like, getting like, to do it over again and, like, living on borrowed time, and that, like, I mean, if God's not, like, shot all through that, like, I mean, I don't obviously know about God then. But I got a second chance. Like, the people There were two people in the other car. I was the only one in the car that I was driving, and those two people were hurt. And I woke up in the hospital the next day with a broken collarbone, and you know, like I wake up out of my blackout and I'm in a hospital, and my parents are on both sides of me, and they like tell me what happened. And that was the worst moment of my life. Was like waking up in the hospital to that like bitter, incomprehensible demoralization, and like realizing that like, you know, I had done this thing, and I don't remember it. And, you know, like, I mean, there's nothing like looking your parents in the eye and, like, have them tell you, like, you know, you drove the wrong way on the freeway, and you hurt a couple of people. So I did not get sober then. I was like, I mean, that's not alcoholic enough for me. My problem was not drinking. It was like drinking and driving. And I just had to figure out a way where I could, you know, like be out on, you know, out on papers and continue to do what I wanted to do. And I left that day from the hospital and I had a, you know, a prescription for hydrocodone that I was going to like fully utilize. And I left the hospital and was out on bail for a while and continuing to use. And this was like more of my period of like trying to figure out the formula where I could like control it. And like I knew that there were some things that were like out of control about it, and I had like kind of conceded to myself that like it didn't really work, you know, the way that I was doing it, and I needed to figure out a right way to do it. And I had to stop smoking weed because I was on probation, and that was like devastating for me because that was like a huge part of my life, and it did something for me that other drugs couldn't do and that I like really liked. And I mean, I'm like completely crazy. Like, this is the point at which the normal drinker, like, has some serious consequences because of, you know, what they do. And they just say, I mean, I'm 17 years old when this drunk driving accident happened. This is when the normal drinker says, okay, like, I'm 17, I'm not of age to drink, I'm in serious trouble because of it, because of drinking. Like, I'm going to stop, at least for a while, until I'm off probation and done with all this. But it says, I'm going to read this. This is the only other thing I'm going to read. But it talks about the difference between the normal drinker, the hard drinker, and the alcoholic in the big book. So moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it, like drunk driving accident. They can take it or leave it alone. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have had the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome. And he may even need medical attention. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And that was, like, where I was at. Like, I was in trouble, and I was just, like, delusional, you know, thinking, like, I could still make it work, and, like, I'm completely, like, I've lost control, but I'm still trying to, like, make it happen. And so I get sober a year and a half later, and in between that year and a half, there are so many blackouts, and I'm taking Xanax and drinking, and, like, you know, like, I'm waking up out of blackouts and trying to assess, like, what I did the night before to make sure that I'm not in trouble, because I'm, like, out on bail, I'm facing 2 to 10, and, you know, like, I'm drinking, obviously, like, I'm powerless and I'm unmanageable, and I, like, won't even recognize it. So, my senior, I get convicted, the week before my senior year in high school, and I go to, the judge, and I get, you know, 4 years probation, no license for 4 years, you know, community service, classes, victim impact panel. I mean, all this stuff, and then 30 days in jail. And so I'm supposed to, you know, wait. It's like right before my senior year, so they decide to have me come turn myself in after I walk across stage and graduate. And, you know, I make good grades, and I end up, like, graduating in the top 10% of my class, and I walk across the stage, and then I go and turn myself in a week later. And, you know, I go out for that last hoorah drunk, like, right before I go into jail, and, you know, end up, like, blacking out and waking up in a guy who's actually sober now, his apartment, who was dealing drugs and, like, you know, like, just completely crazy. And I wake up in his apartment, and the next day I go turn myself in for jail and spend a month in jail. And the whole time I'm in jail, I'm dealing with this, like, obsession. Like, I want to get, like, drunk and loaded. Like, when I'm not drinking and getting loaded, like, I want to get loaded. And it's, like, something I think about all the time. And I get out, and it's, like, the first thing I want to do, you know, and I continue to go back and just do what I do, you know, and I go, I decide, actually, I'm going to college. I'm, like, so scattered right now. I hope some of this is, like, somewhat coherent. But I decide to go to college out of state because I figure that, you know, the state's going to let me do it on probation, and I figure they'll have less tabs on me, and I'll be able to do more of what I want to do and have less drug tests and stuff like that. And so I go away to school to Memphis, and I go to Rhodes College, and I'm at school there, and I'm, like, not drinking daily. Like, I'm thinking about it every day, and, like, I want to every day, but I know that I can't, you know, like, make it work with probation and school and everything like that if I drink every day. And so I'm, like, doing school, like, Monday through Friday, and, like, Friday night I'm, like, making up for it, you know, and, like, wake up Saturday morning. And the pattern, like, at the very end of my drinking was, like, it was just, like, boring, but, like, the same stuff over and over again. Like, Monday through Friday, like, try not to drink, and then Friday, like, big blowout, and wake up Saturday with, like, the hangover that, like, non-alcoholics only have once, you know, like, where you wake up and, like, being sick and dehydrated is, like, only the beginning, you know, and I get, like, nothing done on Saturday, even though I have all these papers due and everything. And I think, like, for, you know, like, weeks on hand, the only thing I got done on Saturday was, like, my laundry. And I would, like, do my laundry and, like, be kind of, like, proud, you know, that I got my laundry. And so I wake up on Saturday morning, and, like, this is, like, the end of my drink. And I didn't even, like, realize this until I had 2 years sober. But, like, I kind of, like, spotted that, like, alcoholic pattern. And, like, as if the, like, accident and everything, like, didn't, like, show me enough. Like, I saw that on Saturday morning, I'd wake up after Friday night drinking and, like, drank way more than I had planned on drinking, got out of control, and I'd wake up on Saturday morning and be like, I'm not going to drink tonight. Not like I'm going to stay sober for the rest of my life or anything like that, but just, like, I'm not going to drink tonight. And I'd mean it. And, you know, I'd get a little hydrated and my stomach would hurt a little less. And I'd have that obsession working in my mind. And while the obsession was working on my mind, and I'd go drink Saturday night and just be like, oh, I changed my mind. You know, like, this is what I want to do. And I'd drink on Saturday night, and I would fully buy my own bullshit that was what I wanted to do. And so I'd wake up on Sunday morning, and it would be the same thing. And then I'd go through the week, and I'd just do it. And it wasn't, like, any, like, you know, big thing, like, you know, that happened that, like, really brought me down, like, so much. I did have one night where I blacked out, and I think I was in this dorm where I used to date a girl, and so I think I was probably trying to get back with her. But I got found by a resident advisor who found me in the girl's bathroom peeing, and I guess I was, like, kind of sly even in blackouts, because, like, I knew that guys stand up to pee, obviously, and girls sit down, and so when I got busted, I was sitting down peeing. It might also have been that I didn't have the best of balance at the time, but it was like, you know, she looked under the stall and saw some big dude feet, and she, you know, confronted me, and she said, you know, are you a student here? No. You know, are you going to tell me your name? No. You know, what are you doing here? Like, I don't know. And she's like, okay, well, I mean, if you're not a student and, you know, you're obviously drunk, you're in the girls' bathroom, like, you're going to have to be escorted off campus by campus safety. And, you know, she goes, and I'm, that's fine, you know, let's do that. And she gets on the phone with campus safety and, you know, calls it in, and I take off running. I don't know. I do things like that are very uncharacteristic of me when I am drunk and loaded that I don't do when I'm sober, like that. And the problem is that I am unable to, like, call it quits, you know, and, like, come to that point where I'm like, all right, I'm good, you know. I'm, you know, taking pills and drinking, and I'm just, like, going for more and more and more. And there's that internal, like, I guess, like, judgment call or whatever that I think normal people might have. I don't have that. And so I do things like that. And I woke up that next morning, and it's funny to tell the story now. It was not funny when it happened. And I woke up the next morning, and I was in trouble for, you know, lying. I was going to go for the honor council, and I was convinced that they were going to tell my probation officer. And, like, I had a good lawyer, and I got off real easy for intoxicated assault with a vehicle. And I was like, man, they're going to throw the book at me. Like, they're going to tell the, you know, Texas what's going on from, you know, Tennessee, and I'm going to go to prison. And so I woke up that next morning, and, like, I walked the hallway bathroom to throw up, and this guy told me what happened and what I did, and, you know, he was laughing about it. It wasn't funny to me, but he was laughing about it. And I went back to my room, and I conceded to my innermost self that I was, like, going to prison. Not that I was an alcoholic, but that I was going to prison. And I don't know, too boyishly cute to go to prison. And I wouldn't have done well there. And I was having lots of problems with anxiety too, and so I'm seeing a therapist about that, and we're not talking about drinking and drugging. Like, I don't know how I can, like, you know, go to a therapist and, like, address some problem and not talk about this, but I'm not talking about it, you know. So I go, and, you know, I go to, like, a next session or something, and she says something about, you know, like, I end up bringing it up, and she says something about, I guess, like, her experience. And she had had an experience where she used to follow widespread panic, and, like, that was who I was at that time. And, you know, that was the in-group that I was in. And that she had had some trouble and, like, took care of herself. And, I mean, really general way, kind of shared her experience, Strength and Hope. And it kind of implanted the idea that, like, maybe I could do something different, like get sober or something. And I wasn't ready to do it yet, but it just, like, it planted a seed. You know, and some people are at the conference and, like, man, they're not ready yet, like, but it's planting a seed, and I really believe that. So I'm still trying to make it work, even after this, you know, encounter and prison and everything, and I don't know, and I'm just, you know, like, scared. And so I'm, like, just going to take pills, you know, because pills, that's the way. I try to just take pills, and I figure out the hard way that, like, once I start doing something, like, I do things uncharacteristic of me, and, you know, the obsession takes over, and then, like, I drink, you know, and I go and I drink. And my biggest problems that I caused were always when I was drinking. I mean, like, I definitely fit in AA. So, anyways, this guy who was in AA had gone to the counseling center where I was going to this therapy, and he had gone and said, you know, my name is Daniel, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've been, you know, sober for a few years, and if anyone comes through the counseling center and wants to get sober or wants to talk about getting sober, here's my number. And so this therapist who had shared her experience, you know, gave me his number and was like, if you're interested and you're open to it, call this guy. And I looked him up on the online directory to see who he was, and I didn't call him for a couple weeks. And, you know, I was going to stay sober on my own, and I didn't need anyone's help. And the speaker last night was talking about how, like, we're alcoholic because because of how we feel when we're not using. And I was so uncomfortable not using and was completely obsessed, you know, in my mind. Like, I really wanted to get high. Like, every, like, fiber in my being wanted to get high and drink. And that was where the willingness came from. I had a month of time without using drugs or drinking before I went to an AA meeting. And it was like the worst month of my life. I wanted to get high and drink all the time. And I woke up in the morning and I like had to just like, I mean, like when people say white knuckle, like I know what it's like to white knuckle. And so anyways, I go up and I talk to this guy and like he said, I'm like, hey man, like and my intention is just not to go to AA, not to like have him sponsor me or anything like that. My intention is to go and talk to him and be like, dude, like, I'm, you know, trying to do the sober thing, and, like, you know, every once in a while it gets really hard. I want to just, like, have somebody I can call, like, you know, the lifeline. And I, like, start that conversation. I have it all rehearsed in my head, how it's going to work out, and it doesn't work out like it does in my head, and he ends up, like, inviting me to a meeting. And I did not want to go to AA, and I did not want to do meetings. I wanted to do this thing on my own, and, like, you know, somehow make it through to that point where I wasn't going to be that I was completely obsessed and, like, really wanting to get high and drink all the time. And he invited me to a meeting, and for some reason, I said yes. And he set a time, and I said, okay. And he picked me up, and he took me to the meeting, and I went begrudgingly and started to hear my story in the room, you know, and, like, hear people talk about stuff that I related to. And I didn't relate to God. I didn't relate to, like, an experience, spiritual experience, anything like that. I related to the problem. And so I'm really grateful that people talk about the problem. And I remember one guy that I related to the most early on was this guy who I would look at and be like, dude, me and him, like, no way do I relate to this guy. He had a mullet, and, you know, he had a Harley Davidson hat, and he was missing teeth, and I highly doubt that he graduated in the top 10% of his class, but I could be wrong. But he had that language of the heart, and he talked about going to bed at night, and his head hit the pillow, and he was sober, and that meant that it was a good day, and that he had done something right. And I related to that, because, like, early sobriety was really hard, and, like, even when I started going to meetings, and even when I started, like, you know, begrudgingly doing some of the things that people talked about, like praying and stuff, like, early sobriety for, like, months was hard for me. And I really wanted to get drunk and high a lot. And because of that, I started doing some of the things that people talked about, you know, like praying and, like, you know, calling people. And I called this one guy, like, I called him late at night because that was, like, when my mind was, like, working, like, overtime for me to go and still, you know, like, I still was holding on to some drugs and I was going to, like, you know, as a backup plan, I still had my, like, my backdoor plan in case, like, things didn't really work out with the sober thing. And I called this guy, and I don't remember anything that he said, but I remember that he started a lot of what he said with, my sponsor tells me, or my sponsor told me. And, like, I got this idea that, like, sponsorship was important and that, like, I needed to do that. And so I started working the steps with him, and I did a 1-2-3 hangout, and I got a little bit of relief from, like, starting to do some of the things. And so I was kind of balking at the fourth step. And I'd call him every once in a while and be like, hey, man, like, I'm really suffering. Like, this one thing is really, this is the problem. This is really pushing my buttons. And he kept saying, like, man, if you do a fourth step, like, it'll really help. You do a force, it'll really help. I was like, no, that's not what I need to do, you know. Like, this thing needs to go this way. And so I hold off as long as I possibly can. I have, like, I think 5 months sober. And I come, and it's the end of the semester, and I'm required to come back to Texas because of my probation. And I come back to Texas, and I don't have a driver's license, so I'm, like, having to get rides everywhere. And there's this one dude that, like, really wants to give me rides, and not like that, but he starts taking me to meetings, and I'm in a meeting one night that he had driven me to, and, like, the topic is sponsorship and, like, the importance of that. And I realized that I don't have a sponsor in Houston and that I need one if I'm going to stay sober. Because everybody I know in Houston that I associate with, like, my whole group of friends are the people that I use with. And, like, they were not people that I was going to be able to lean on and get experience, strength, and hope from about staying sober. And I needed those people. And so I go to dinner afterwards, and he ends up sponsoring me and up working the steps with him, and I do the fourth step. And one of the big things that I learned in the fourth step was how much of an active participant I am in my own suffering, and how I, am a big part of the problem, and that I need to make some serious changes in my life in order to suffer less. And, you know, like, some of these things that, like, might be, like, blatantly apparent to other people, like, weren't necessarily the case for me. And I get to, like, my part in the columns, and I just, like, have more insight into my own life than I had in the, like, months of therapy that I was in. And I don't know why that is. I just, you know, I finally did the work. I surrendered and did the work and, like, saw who I was dealing with. And I saw, like, I had to give up a lot of that resistance that I had because I saw, like, the problem, like, on paper. And, like, there was no denying, and, like, you know, the truth will set you free. Like, I saw the truth about myself. And so I quickly had to do the fifth step right away, you know, and I decided, you know, every time that I try to do things on like, my terms, like, it kind of ends up a little shaky, and, like, it's not really that, like, solid foundation. So I grabbed this guy who had 19 piercings, actually, but he was sober, and I grabbed this guy and did a fifth step. And it didn't really, like, take. Like, nothing really happened. And, you know, my sponsor was like, dude, what happened? Like, you went and did your fifth step, like, just with some random guy. And I was like, yeah, I did. But, like, I want to do it with you too. And, you know, make sure that I, like, you know, continue working the steps with you. I just, like, felt like I had to do it. And I go and I do the fifth step. And with my sponsor, who was, like, you know, taking me to all these meetings and everything. And that thing happened that, like, absolutely changed who I was. I read him all these things, and we go through it, and it takes hours, and we go through my part and everything. And he points in the book, and we were always in the book, and he points in the book where it suggests an hour of meditation after doing the fifth step. I can go back to my house. He goes and drops me off. You know, I don't have a driver's license. He goes and drops me off. And I sit in my backyard in, like, the experience of connection that I had always been looking for my whole life. You know, like, that feeling of, like, I belong here. And, you know, like, I did a bunch of stuff that, like, isn't necessarily stuff to be proud of. But this is a place where I get to use that stuff to help other people. I realized that day that, like, everything that had, like, led up to there, and, like, I'm not going to stay in this experience for the rest of my life, but this was the experience that I had that day, was that, like, everything was going to serve this purpose, and that, you know, I belonged in AA, and, you know, I looked back at what my sponsor had done, and I was like, man, I can do that with someone else. Like, he just told the truth and, like, said what his experience was, and this changed my life, and I can, like, you know, do that too. I continue on with the steps and get to the ninth step, and I don't think I shared this, but the two people that were hurt in the accident, like, one of them, I was going to try and apologize to, and he didn't want to hear anything from me and said that he wished that I had died in the accident. And so I'm, like, living with that, like, that whole time, and, like, you know, I still do, and, like, it's still, like, kind of hard, and I get to the amends part of the steps, and go talk to someone who has, you know, a similar experience, and, you know, find out what they do. And, you know, he goes, and as bad as I feel like I'm doing today, like, I started speaking, like, because that was what he did, and what he suggested was go and talk to people who are, you know, at risk for drinking and driving, and just share your story, just tell what happened. And so, like, as part of my amends, I go and talk at colleges and high schools, and, you know, just talk about, like, just that night and how I thought it would never happen to me, and how, you know, like, it was just a regular night, and it was just one drive, one night, and it completely changed my life. And I don't know, I got, like, a lot of a lot of relief and like gratitude that I would be able to do something like that. Because sometimes it's just like overwhelming, like shame and guilt. And like to be able to like have a step that like focuses so directly at that, and like so directly in service, and like being able to show up and like help other people, like just kind of cleans a lot of that stuff up for me. I guess I should talk about, I picked up three years, my first 3 years sober, I got rides to meetings for like, you know, every single meeting I went to. And I went to AA meetings, and I was like involved in AA, so I went to committee meetings, and like went to conferences in and out of town, and like people were like giving me rides everywhere. People were doing their service work, helping me out to make sure that I could be there so that I could do my service work. And, like, it was all interrelated. And I go in one day to my probation officer, and meetings with my probation officer were drastically improved after I got sober. I did not experience the fear of getting called back and all of that stuff. And one of the ways, early in recovery, I shared about in meetings about how, like, people were talking about, like, where you see God, and I saw God in little plastic cups because I didn't have to worry about getting called back. You know, I could go in and pee in that cup and not worry about what was in it because I knew I was, like, you know, not drinking and using drugs. So I go in one day and talk to my probation officer, and she knows what I'm doing in AA, and, like, I don't, like, talk about it very much, but she kind of knows about it, and she's like, okay, well, you know, you've been doing the right thing, so I'm going to reward you for what you're doing and give you your license back. And, man, I drive in my car, and, like, I do my morning meditation, and, like, you know, for a while, like, I would do my morning meditation, and, like, I'd be like, man, like, this just feels so rote, and, like, I'm just, like, trying to, you know, connect, but it's just not working. And then, like, I start my day, and I'd do it even though I wasn't really feeling it, and I'd do it anyways. And then I'd go, and I'd, like, get in my car and, like, start my car. I'd be like, man, like, this is God. Like, me, like, being able to drive a car is, like, a very tangible way that I see that, like, something is working in my life that is bigger than me and better than me and greater than me and, like, is through me and all that. I'm not someone who was going to get off probation. I'm not someone who's going to get their license back. Like, none of that stuff was going to happen. I wasn't going to graduate college because I was going to go to prison because I was going to violate probation and get in trouble and all that. And anyways, I get my license back, and, like, man, I love giving people rides to meetings. Like, I don't want to freak anyone out, and I don't want to get, like, too many calls about rides, but I love giving people rides to meetings. Like, that's, like, one of my favorite ways to serve in AA. But I continue on with the steps. I finish the steps, and then I, you know, get a sponsor in Memphis because I need to have a sponsor wherever I'm living and, you know, be accountable and all that. And I go back to school, and, you know, I'm graduated now. Like, I finished, and I, you know, graduated in, you know, honor society, psychology honor society, and, you know, did well in school and stuff, like, you know, directly related to me being in AA and learning the stuff that people talked about and doing things that I didn't want to do because I heard other people talking about they did things that they didn't want to do and, like, showed up to class and, you know, did those, like, very simple things. And I guess I want to share, and I brought this thing to read, and it's one of those things, like, because I don't necessarily always feel this, like, strong presence of God in my life. Like, sometimes I do. Right now, where I am in my sobriety, like, I'm having a lot of fear, and, like, I don't know what I'm going to do next, and so I'm not, like, real connected up, and I'm not sunburned by the sunlight of the Spirit right now. So little things, like, these little mementos and things, like, they really help me. And, like, one of the things, like, I went and got my driver's license renewed, and, like, man, I look at my driver's license, and I'm like, I didn't do this, you know. This is, like, something working in my life. But I was at school, and I knew I was off probation because the date had ended. But I went and I checked my mailbox, and this was the thing that I read in the mail. Is, "Dear Mr. Watson, congratulations. Your community supervision in cause number 9 058721 has been terminated. You are no longer required to report to Harris County Community Supervision and Corrections Department. Best of luck to you, Cindy Clark, supervising officer. And I don't know, like, I didn't think I was going to get off probation. I didn't think I was going to get my driver's license back. I didn't think I would stay sober for 4.5 years. I wasn't going to graduate college. Like, all this stuff that, is, like, you know, directly due to the fact that I went and did all these things that, like, I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be here, you know? And, you know, sitting here last night and, like, I want to be here now, you know? I really want to be here and I want to stay. And I want to do the work because I got something here that I didn't get anywhere else. You know, and all my searching and all that, like, trying to fit in here and, you know, trying to, like, gain acceptance here. Like, I don't have to do that. Y'all will accept me exactly as I am, like, sweating and, you know, like, swallowing hard and heart beating fast and nervous and, you know, like, I don't have to be someone I'm not here. And I don't know. I really appreciate when people are honest and talk struggling and doing that, because if I didn't know that it was okay to struggle in AA, I would have left a long time ago. You know, and, like, right now, like, I'm having the existential crisis of today, you know? Like, I had that one last week, and I got the one today, and I have hope, you know, because I know that other people do too, and that they have gotten through it, and you know, show up, and you know, speak in front of podiums even when they're scared, and do all that kind of stuff. But Hickey Paw is really important to me. I got involved in service here because I was at coffee one day, and I, you know, my ride, who I was hanging out with. I could have gotten another ride, but one of the rides that I was hanging out with was going, and she was like the co-chair or something like that. I didn't know anything about Hickey Paw. I didn't know anything about this, like, young people conference stuff, but some people were really excited about it. And anyway, so I went, and I didn't actually know what I was getting myself into, but I went, and, like, it's one of those things that is just, like, really important to my recovery, because I heard my first speaker meeting at a, you know, conference, and heard young people talk about, you know, the things that I went through, and got some clarity on, like, you know, some of that, like, oh, well, I'm, you know, got sober when I was 19, like, am I, you know, stuff like that gets, like, addressed, you know, and having fun in sobriety, like, I have lots of fun in sobriety. I have friends today that, one, that, like, I don't have to, like, necessarily, like, be someone else. I get to be weird and eccentric and, you know, like, nervous and all that with them and have fun doing it sober. And I don't know if I said this, but I don't obsess in about drinking and doing drugs anymore. That was removed when I worked the steps. That's, like, really important. I don't know why I didn't talk about that. It's, like, one of the most important things that happened because of, like, me working the steps. But I don't know what else to say. This definitely didn't go like I planned, so that's probably good. I guess I'm done. Thanks.
Hickey Paw got this for you. Thanks for speaking. Aww. So there's something happening at noon. The kickoff meeting. Wrap-up meeting. 2009 Hickey Paw kickoff meeting. I don't know what they call it. At noon. Is that right? Okay, at noon. So, thanks for everybody that made it this morning, and thank you, Tom, so much for sharing your experience. Let's close.
us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
As long as they weren't banging on the
Praise God. Thank God.